here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
Today is Monday, May 21st. I'm Chirag Mahajan, joined by Martin Lemlin. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you live from the University of British Columbia to the UBC campus, to the residents of Vancouver, and to listeners of our newscast and podcast on our website, citr.ca. Our headlines will cover provincial and federal news from across Canada today. We'll leave out local and UBC campus news for Friday. And to start off, we will have our international headlines brought to you by Democracy Now! Stay tuned for your weekday weather forecast and your provincial headlines after Democracy Now!'s international headlines.
Now, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Dozens of people have been killed in a suicide bombing in the Yemeni capital of Sana'a. Early reports say around 100 have died, but the death toll could rise. The bomber was reportedly dressed in a military uniform and targeted a military parade. Al-Qaeda has claimed responsibility for the attack. Thousands of people marched in Chicago on Sunday in the largest demonstration so far against the NATO summit. The Chicago police have been criticized by activist groups for using violent force to break up protests. On Saturday, a police van was videotaped nearly running over a protester. Dozens of protesters have been arrested over the past 2 days. The Chicago police have also been accused of targeting independent media activists who've been streaming the protests live over the internet. On Saturday night, police detained 3 live streamers at gunpoint. At the end of Sunday's march, Iraq Veterans Against the War held a ceremony where nearly 50 veterans discarded their war medals by hurling them in the direction of the NATO summit.
That these medals were given to them in many instances for creating essentially unforgivable acts, inflicting pain on innocent civilians in most cases.
This is just to demonstrate that the current operations are not working. You know, I came to a conclusion that there is no such thing as war on terrorism. What we're doing is waging war against the people of Afghanistan, which are resulting into joining the Taliban.
Before the weekend began, 3 activists were arrested on terrorism charges for an alleged plot to attack President Obama's campaign headquarters and other sites around Chicago during the NATO summit. Jared Chase, Brent Betterly, and Brian Jacob Church are accused of conspiracy to commit terrorism, material support for terrorism, and possession of explosives. Police say they recovered materials for making Molotov cocktails in a raid last week. But attorneys for the so-called NATO 3 say they were set up by government informants who planted the explosives. Supporters also say police seized equipment that was used for brewing homemade beer. Michael Deutsch, an attorney for the protesters with the National Lawyers Guild, accused Chicago police of entrapment.
Obviously, we don't have access to all the information that the state has. But what we do know is that there were police, undercover police officers, that ingratiated themselves with people who come from out of town. And from our information, the so-called incendiary devices and the plans to attack police stations, attack the mayor's office, is all coming from the mind of the police informants and are not coming from from our clients who are nonviolent protesters. They're not anarchists. They don't belong to a black bloc organization. They're involved with nonviolent protests. And what we believe is that this is a way to stir up prejudice against the people who are exercising their First Amendment rights.
On Sunday, two more activists were charged with terror-related allegations, one with threatening to blow up a downtown bridge and a second with seeking to build pipe bombs. Police say the alleged plots were in the planning stages and no explosives were recovered. After headlines, we'll go to the streets of the NATO summit to hear more of the protests. In other news from the Chicago summit, NATO leaders have approved the first phase of a U.S.-led so-called missile defense shield to be deployed in Europe. The plan will deploy a U.S. warship armed with interceptors in the Mediterranean, as well as a radar system in a German base. Russia has condemned the move and threatened to station rockets in areas bordering the European Union. The UN's top nuclear oversight official has arrived in Tehran for talks with the Iranian government. The visit from International Atomic Energy Agency Chief Yuki Amano comes ahead of a key summit in Baghdad between Iran and world powers, including the U.S., later this week. Ahead of his visit, Amano said he's optimistic that a new framework for monitoring Iran's nuclear sites can be reached.
We need to keep up the momentum. There has been good progress during the recent round of discussions between Iran and IAEA. So I thought that now is the right time for me to visit Tehran and have a direct talk with high-level officials of Iran.
The Republican-controlled House has approved a new military policy bill that would increase spending limits for the Pentagon while upholding indefinite detention. Under the National Defense Authorization Act for the upcoming fiscal year, the U.S. would allocate $642 billion for the Pentagon, exceeding congressionally mandated spending limits by $8 billion. The New York Times notes the bill, quote, makes clear House Republicans and many Democrats are opposed to including the Pentagon in the coming era of fiscal austerity. In approving the measure, lawmakers also reject an amendment that would have barred the indefinite detention of suspects seized on U.S. soil. Alabama Governor Robert Bentley has signed into law a harsher version of the state's notorious anti-immigrant law, despite publicly calling for its revision. The measure would preserve original provisions, including the requirement that schools check enrolling students' immigration status, while adding new regulations mandating the publication of the names and photographs of undocumented immigrants who appear in court. Governor Bentley signed the new measure into law on Friday, just one day after he called for a special legislative session to make changes. The board of directors of the NAACP has voted for the first time to endorse same-sex marriage. The move follows President Obama's endorsement of gay marriage earlier this month and speculation over whether that would hurt his standing among some African-American voters. In a statement, NAACP President Ben Jealous said, quote, civil marriage is a civil right and a matter of civil law. The well-funded right-wing organizations who are attempting to split our communities are no friend to civil rights, and they will not succeed, he said. And tens of thousands took to the streets in the Canadian province of Quebec over the weekend to protest the provincial government's latest efforts to end a three-month student strike. On Friday, Quebec lawmakers passed an emergency law requiring demonstrators to inform police of any protest route involving 50 or more people. The measure also bars the wearing of masks at protests. Those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman.
Thank you to Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! For those international headlines. You're listening to News 101 here on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from the University of British Columbia. We're going to take a quick break, but do stay with us for your provincial and national headlines, as well as your weekday weather forecast.
Sun Yat-sen was a Chinese revolutionary political figure, the first president and founding father of modern Chinese democracy. As the foremost pioneer of the Republic of China, Sun is referred to as the father of the nation in Taiwan and the forerunner of democratic revolution in the People's Republic of China. Although he is considered one of the greatest leaders of Chinese history, his political life was one of constant struggle and frequent exile. Sun Yat-sen's biggest political legacy is his political philosophy known as the Three Principles of the People: nationalism, democracy, and livelihood. He died at the age of 58 in 1925. In Vancouver's historic Chinatown, the classical Chinese garden is named in his honor.
This PSA was brought to you in support of Asian Heritage Month by CITR 101.9 FM.
Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no?
Welcome back to News 101 here on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Up next, we have another edition of another health segment by our health reporter, Sharon Hundle.
Welcome to your weekly health beat on CITR 101.9 FM. It's Dietitian Intuition,
your source for precise nutrition advice. What are you going to hear?
We'll cover everything. We'll bust nutrition myths, give tips, do book reviews as well as interviews, you name it. And now here are your dietetic students, Andrea, Jessica, and Sharon, for this week's segment.
Hi, everyone. This week I have Andrea in the studio with me, and this is the first day we all got together as a group, so it was really exciting. We want to give you a good introduction into what we're doing with our weekly segments. Each week, all three of us get together and do some research on topics that are relevant to the times, and we want to give you a brief interview into what dietetics is all about. So a common question we get often is, what is the difference between a dietitian and a nutritionist? So Andrea is going to go into that with a little bit more detail for you.
Hey everyone. So the main difference is that a dietitian is required to complete a 4 years bachelor degree with a supervised internship, usually with clinical exposure in a hospital. The term dietitian is also legally protected, meaning that it can only be used by people who have successfully met certain requirements, and that person can write the initials RD after their name. On the other hand, nutritionists may have some education in the field or none at all, and may not meet all the requirements that a dietitian has to. So, what does this mean to you? As soon-to-be RDs, we feel it's important to promote our profession and keep you up to date on the latest nutrition news. So here we are. For more information, check out www.dietitians.ca.
Okay, so as promised, last week we said we would talk about things to do in Vancouver to stay fit and active. So we thought of two things that is really easy to do for most people. So we all know where the seawall is. It's right downtown in Vancouver. And we just want to emphasize that it's free, and that's always a really good thing. So if you were to jog the whole length of the seawall, it's about 12 kilometers, and you would burn approximately 900 calories. So it's a pretty good option, good bang for your buck. The other option is the Grouse Grind, which is always very popular because it's been in Vancouver for years. Lots of people go to that each year. The exciting thing is that it just opened up this past Saturday for the summer season. So it's actually 2,830 steps, and that could take you between an hour to 2 hours to get all the way to the top, but that really depends on your fitness level. So I encourage everyone to do their stretching and get conditioned before heading up there. We just want to point out that the tickets for the Sky Ride down are only $10. $5, so it's pretty affordable and, again, a good option for your family or a couple or whatever you want to do. So these are the two places we hope you'll check out in the next week to stay fit and active. Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in again this week.
If you missed us, go to CITR.ca to listen to our podcast or follow us on Twitter at CITR Dietitians for more dietitian intuition. Until next time, stay happy and healthy, Vancouver.
Welcome back to News 101. Thank you to Sharon Hundle for that interesting health segment. And now we go to our weekday weather forecast brought to you by the UBC Storm Club and our News 101 weatherman, Phil Chan.
Great. Thank you, CJ. And good evening, listeners. So, a low-pressure cell lingering in the Pacific Ocean just southwest of our city is heavily influencing our weather. While other synoptic patterns, such as a trough this Wednesday, could punch some holes in the overcast skies, the majority of this week will be cool and showery. The earliest we expect some more consistent dry weather would be Friday, which is after the model predicts the low-pressure cell starts heading south. Now, here's your five-day weekday weather forecast for UBC. Tonight, 80% chance of under 10 millimeters of accumulated rain, low of 11. Tuesday, early morning showers, followed by an overcast sky with 40% chance of additional showers, high of 12, low of 10. Wednesday, cloudy with a 20% chance of showers, high of 14, low of 11. On Thursday, it will be cloudy with a 40% chance of rain, high of 14, low of 8. Friday, partly cloudy, high of 16, low of 10. So that's your five-day weekday weather forecast for UBC, brought to you by the UBC Storm Club. Currently, it is 14 degrees Celsius on campus. Reporting for News 101, I'm Phil Chang.
Thank you, Phil, for that interesting weather forecast. Looking forward to all
Friday. Looking forward to Friday and the weekend when it starts getting better.
Yes. All right. And now for your local and campus headlines.
In a Vancouver experiment over the past year and a half, seven paralyzed patients played computer games at home while electrodes in a wrist cuff sent electrical currents to paralyzed muscles so that they could contract, allowing users to grasp and move a joystick. The wrist stimulator is controlled by users when they click their teeth to trigger hand opening or closing. Every tooth click generates a vibration in the jaw and temporal bones that is detected by a sensor in an earpiece, similar to a Bluetooth device. While electrical stimulation is now broadly used in rehab of such patients, previous work has shown that electrical stimulation triggered by voluntary, controlled movements produces better results than when non-triggered stimulation is used. The technologically advanced exercise therapy trial was funded by a $360,000 grant from the Rick Hansen Institute. The purpose of the study was to evaluate improvements in hand function and to be able to predict how often the therapy would have to be used to attain benefits. So training once a week was compared with training five times a week. Tanya Lam, a University of BC researcher and professor of kinesiology who led the Vancouver arm of the study, said it involved tremendous effort on the part of the study coordinators and participants, but she says it was worth it. She says, quote, "We saw from our own preliminary data in Vancouver that participants really benefited from this type of training, achieving abilities with their hand functions that they had not been able to do since their injury," end quote.
The world can now digitally access all of UBC's graduate theses and dissertations with Circle, a digital repository developed by the UBC community. This online archive of UBC research contains over 5 million pages of graduate papers dating back all the way to 1919. UBC archivist Chris Hives said UBC has worked on Circle over the last 3 years. The UBC newspaper has compiled a list of the strangest theses they have heard of, which includes swimming in slime, household pets and depression among suburban adolescents, and can you win at Tetris?
The executive director of the University of BC's Sustainability Initiative has been named 2012 Environmental Scientist of the Year by the Royal Canadian Geographical Society, a very astute honor. Geography professor John Robinson, nicknamed Dr. Sustainability, is recognized for his work in establishing UBC's Center for Interactive Research on Sustainability, otherwise known as CIRS. Built as one of the greenest buildings on Earth for its innovative energy, water, lighting, and building design. He also shared the 2007 Nobel Peace Prize with former U.S. Vice President Al Gore as part of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Robinson will participate in a free panel discussion at CIRS on May 26th at 10:45 a.m. on Next Generation Sustainability.
And on our radar today in Vancouver is the Rick Hansen 25th Anniversary Relay, a homage to Rick Hansen's Man in Motion tour in 1987. The relay, which began on August 24, 2011 in Cape Spear, Newfoundland, ends in Vancouver tomorrow and fully recreated the original Man in Motion cross-country tour, spanning 12,000 kilometers coast to coast. About 7,000 medal bearers took part, collectively covering an average 40 to 80 kilometers a day.
The largest Aboriginal community in BC, with a population of 4,500, Cowichan tribe suffers from an unemployment rate of around 85%. That may be a key factor in the community's recent cluster of suicide attempts, according to tribe officials. Quote, "To me, there's a sense of hopelessness. It seems that we're in a time where I guess the economy is difficult, there's high unemployment, and many of the inherent rights that we know of are being eroded. For example, our hunting rights, our fishing rights. There is some hope. We are working hard to create some employment through economic development," end quote. That was Chief Harvey Alphonse. So he said that last Monday. Now, there have been 52 suicide alerts between January and May this year. Four, including two Cowichan tribe staff members, were successful in ending their own lives. Elder Lushim Arvid Charlie, a Cowichan tribe counselor, said more dollars are needed to implement programs to prevent suicide from being considered as an option.
And those are our local and campus headlines on News 101 here on CITR 101.9 FM. We now go to our provincial and national headlines.
The charity behind Vancouver's supervised injection site, named Insight, has supplied a city permit to run its mobile needle exchange in Abbotsford. The PHS Community Service Society has been driving the van full of clean medical supplies to the city for 4 hours a week for the last 8 months. Since then, advocates have been trying to have an unenforced 2005 city bylaw banning harm reduction measures such as needle exchanges and supervised injection sites overturned. The Society's executive director, Mark Townsend, said on Friday that, quote, "No local residents have complained at all. The police parked behind the van, but they've done nothing," end quote. Townsend said he's very optimistic that City Council will take the necessary steps to remove the legal ambiguity around the needle exchange. He thinks that would put pressure on the Fraser Health Authority to fund the initiative, the way Vancouver Coastal Health funds Insight, Vancouver's injection site. UBC medical anthropologist Dr. Dan Small sent a letter to Abbotsford Mayor Bruce Banman and all the city councilors Wednesday on behalf of the PHS Community Services Society, urging them to consider the peer-reviewed evidence that needle exchanges save lives and millions in healthcare costs. City Council is scheduled to review the business license application on May 28th.
Commuter rail service linking Mission, BC, to downtown Vancouver could come to a grinding halt if there is a strike by Canadian Pacific Railway employees. CP Rail provides the operating crew for the West Coast Express, which provides weekday rail service between Mission and Vancouver along a 65-kilometer route, connecting Maple Ridge, Pitt Meadows, Port Coquitlam, and Port Moody with downtown Vancouver. The union, Teamsters Canada Rail Conference, which represents 5,000 employees, issued a 72-hour strike notice over the weekend, which means it could strike as early as Wednesday. The two sides are continuing to negotiate, and Federal Labor Minister Lisa Raitt issued a news release on Sunday urging talks or binding arbitration rather than a work stoppage. The release didn't hint whether Raitt would intervene, as she did, to block job action at Air Canada and Canada Post. The union says Canadian Pacific Railway is demanding major concessions on pensions, work rules, and wages. Fred Cummings with the BC Rapid Transit Company said, quote, CP Rail will be in a strike position as of Wednesday morning, just after midnight, so that could potentially impact Wednesday's commute, but we are hopeful that CP will meet their obligations and commitments to us and have those trains operating, end quote. Fred Cummings also said that the company is developing contingency plans if service is derailed.
A BC fish farm where a virus deadly to Atlantic salmon was detected won't wait for the Canadian Food Inspection Agency to confirm tests and will go ahead and cull its more than 500,000 fish. Earlier this week, the fish farm called Mainstream Canada announced that fish in its Dixon Bay farm north of Tofino tested positive for infectious hematopoietic necrosis, or IHN. It's the first time in 9 years that Atlantic salmon farmed in BC have tested positive for IHN. The company was on standby Thursday to cull more than 500,000 1-kilogram fish, but CFIA said confirmation of test results could take up to 2 weeks. The inspection agency said in a statement that, quote, the CFIA has placed a quarantine on the facility and samples are being taken for further testing. Confirmation testing on the samples is being conducted at the National Aquatic Animal Health Laboratory and results are expected within weeks, end quote. Mainstream Canada operates 27 farms in BC, including 14 in the Tofino area. Those 14 farms began conducting IHN tests of their fish as soon as it was detected. IHN is endemic to wild Pacific fish and not considered deadly to them. It's harmless to humans, but attacks the kidneys and spleen of the Atlantic farm salmon and can lead to rotting flesh and organ failure.
A new group called the Clean Mining Alliance was launched last week. The group is a non-profit industry association and seeks to promote new forms of technology for use in the mining industry in an effort to make mining cleaner, safer, and ultimately less expensive. Dallas Kachin, the executive director of the Clean Mining Alliance, said his background in the clean technology industry spurred the idea of creating an alliance for the mining industry. He also said that the group has four purposes: the promotion of new technology, to drive international standards to facilitate clean mining technology, to create networks between members and the greater mining industry, and to assist in professional development. Kachan said that new members must be able to prove that their technology will bring innovation to the mining industry, pointing out that this helps to prevent the concerns some people might have about quote-unquote greenwashing, a term that means a deceptive use of marketing to give the idea a firm's intentions are environmentally friendly. There are five charter members of the alliance, the Clean Mining Alliance, that is: Cametco Research, American Manganese, Nevada Clean Magnesium, and the Center for Environmental Research in Minerals, Metals, and Materials at the University of British Columbia. Each of them is working on a new approach to reduce environmental impacts from mining.
A final last-ditch effort between Air Canada and its pilots to work out a new contract on their own came to a crashing halt this Saturday, as talks fell through and arbitration appeared as a last resort. The Air Canada Pilots Association, a union that represents 3,000 pilots who operate Air Canada's mainline fleet, issued a news release on Saturday indicating that 10 days of negotiations failed to produce a deal, and the dispute was to go to arbitration. The union wouldn't elaborate on what issues are keeping the two sides apart, citing a blackout that was imposed on the talks. Captain Jean-Marc Bélanger, chairman of the Master Executive Council of the Air Canada Pilots Association, said in the news release that, quote, to say we are disappointed would be a vast understatement. We did everything possible to reach an agreement, paring down our proposals, addressing the airline's issues, and showing flexibility at the bargaining table, end quote. The two sides were to meet with federal arbitrator Doug Stanley, likely within days, who would lay out the rules for the arbitration process. The two sides would both submit proposals to Stanley, who is to pick one of them as the basis of a new contract.
The Canadian Taxpayers Federation says gasoline taxes will soon suck $1 billion out of the wallets of drivers in Metro Vancouver this year. The Federation's BC Director Jason Bateman says drivers elsewhere in the province will pay a further $800 million in gas taxes to various levels of government and transit authorities. Bateman says in the Metro Vancouver region, increases in the carbon tax and gas tax that goes to TransLink will result in drivers paying nearly 50 cents a litre in gas taxes, which he says is the highest on the continent. The tax that goes to TransLink rose 2 cents a litre in April, while the carbon tax rises 1.1% on July 1st. Bateman says people living in the Victoria area will pay $133.8 million in gas tax this year, while drivers outside the Lower Mainland and Victoria regions will hand over another $687 million.
One of Quebec's main student federations called upon its fellow citizens to disobey the provincial government's emergency law passed last week to stymie the daily and sometimes violent student protests. The federation called CLAS nevertheless took no responsibility for the violent protests over the weekend, in which there were hundreds of arrests and several injuries, including a serious head trauma. Spokespeople for the CLAS blamed the government entirely for the social chaos gripping Montreal's nocturnal hours, saying it must immediately withdraw Bill 78. The government should cancel the bill, quote, before people get injured, before people die, end quote, said spokesperson Gabrielle Nadeau-Dubois. I think it's Nadeau-Dubois. The group is specifically calling for protesters to continue to gather in the streets as if the special law hadn't been passed, which calls for groups of more than 50 people to inform the police at least 8 hours in advance of the protest's time and route. It provides for heavy fines, up to $125,000 for student associations, and $35,000 for its leaders if the protest doesn't conform to those plans. According to the CLAS, the Charter of Rights and Freedoms gives people the right to protest freely without submitting to the constraints of Bill 78, which it expects will be struck down by the courts. The words also appear on a new website launched to put faces to the individuals they are urging to defy the law. The site, arrêtez-moi-quelqu'un.com, translates as "somebody arrest me," and is a not-so-subtle taunt at the authorities and the government. Within a couple hours of its launch on Saturday, the site had over 500 pictures of people expressing the words, "I disobey." For more on the political situation in Quebec, we're going to go to a segment produced by myself, and it's borderline bilingual, so take your translators out.
This is an opportunity for people to cool down, take a breath, look at the overall situation.
To create more violence, more tensions, and I think that everyone wants to avoid this.
Boy, howdy! Just when you think the student protest has reached a boiling point and it couldn't possibly get any more chaotic, well, that's when it really hits the fan. This boycott has been called a strike, which pretty much puts the conflict in line with how the government, both federal and provincial, deal with dissatisfied unions. And like the Canada Post strike, the Federal Air Canada disputes, and the BC teachers strike, the Quebec government is trying to quell the mayhem with legislation. But there is a difference. Where postal workers, Air Canada employees, and teachers in BC have bent to the will of the laws that force them to shut up and go back to work, students in Quebec are pushing back.
It's unacceptable, and if we need to break this law, we will seriously consider it.
They already have. And will continue to march right around Bill 78, which the Charest government passed on May 18th. Now, this supposed emergency law prohibits any form of gathering within 50 meters of any university or cégep building. If any group of 50 people plan to be at the same place at the same time, that now has to be approved by the cops. And keeping in stride with the day's fashions, it imposes hefty daily fines that double if it happens more than once for anyone who breaks any stipulation of this law. But this has not stopped student groups from taking it to the streets. Friday was relatively peaceful. The police hadn't started enforcing the new law yet. Saturday was unnerving, with a little under 100 arrests. And last night was madness in Montreal, with about 300 protesters arrested. And the marches are scheduled to continue tonight, tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, on and on into the summer months. For the students, this law is a blatant mockery of their civil rights, which is supposed to be protected by legislation. Legislation just like Bill 78.
It's no longer about the strike. It's about the democracy. It's about our civil rights that are under attack by this government.
This is a question of freedom of assembly, right? Freedom of expression, freedom of assembly.
For others, the law represents a sincere effort on the part of the National Assembly of Quebec to restore some form of order on public streets.
Open the classes, give to our street and the subway and our bridge a place where people will not be afraid to go.
And there are even some non-striking students who question the bill's tactics.
I mean, to some extent, the fines and the legislation makes sense, but then once you take yourself out of that urgent position, this legislation just seems like an infringement on constitutional rights.
This really is a recurring theme all over this country, and a legitimate question that should be answered. What do you do with a group of people who won't do what they're told? For the rest of the country, borderline, if not entirely, unconstitutional laws seem to do the trick. But in Quebec, the students got gusto, a fine glide in their stride, a beat for their feet. Hell, even the politicians do it differently in Quebec. Where else in this country would a premier actually make an effort to explain to the public the reasoning behind a particular piece of legislation?
J'annonce que le projet de loi proposera de garantir l'accès à l'éducation. Il sera fondé sur le principe sacré de la liberté de chaque citoyen.
Ah, bien sûr, c'est un pays bilingue. On a le droit de parler en français si ça nous tente, mais t'as dit.
Mais il faut poser une question pour M. Charest. Since when are the rights of citizens sacred? It seems to me an odd practice to go out of your way to point out how sacred our rights and liberties are, when the bill that inspired this little pep talk tramples those very rights.
Notre Charte des droits et libertés de la personne le dit. Que les droits et libertés de la personne humaine sont inséparables des droits et libertés d'autrui et du bien-être général.
Okay, okay, ça fait un peu de sauce, Monsieur le Premier ministre, who just shot a hole through my argument by annoyingly pointing out that individual rights are inseparable from those of the general public. Surely students have the right to associate and assemble peacefully with anyone. But these get-togethers haven't been all s'mores and kumbaya. Riot gear, Molotov cocktails, tear gas, pepper spray, and gratuitous fires. Although this sounds like one hell of a destructively good time, calme paisible sont pas les premiers mots qui me viennent à l'esprit. And just to compound this insolent-looking situation, the student unions, particularly Klaus and Gabrielle Nadeau-Dubois, refuse to publicly decry the violence.
Comment allez-vous calmer vos éléments les plus militants dans les prochaines heures?
Tout ce qu'on pourrait faire pour calmer les étudiants et les étudiantes est inutile. Parce que le gouvernement vient de mettre le feu aux poudres comme il ne l'avait jamais fait auparavant. M. Charest, depuis le début du conflit, a multiplié les affronts et là, ce qu'il vient de faire ce soir, ça va mettre le feu aux poudres. Ça va susciter la colère. Ça va augmenter les situations de confrontation sur les campus, ça ne règle absolument rien dans les...
Alors c'est comme ça, hein? Monsieur Nadeau-Dubois and the whole Klaus clan seem to be sticking to their guns, accusing the Premier of fanning the flames of this disagreement, while the Premier is flexing his legislative muscle to whip these kids in line. Will it have any effect?
Heureusement, il n'y a aucune loi qui va empêcher les étudiants et les étudiantes de manifester. Il n'y a aucune loi qui va nous empêcher de se mobiliser. Donc, on relance l'appel à la mobilisation qu'on avait déjà lancé la semaine dernière, la semaine prochaine, 22 mai. On attend des dizaines de milliers de personnes dans les rues de Montréal pour rappeler au gouvernement Charest que c'est pas avec des lois ni avec des matraques qui va faire taire la jeunesse, qui va faire taire ceux qui s'opposent à sa vision. On invite les gens à descendre dans la rue, donc ce soir, mais aussi demain soir, tous les jours, jusqu'à l'automne, s'il le faut, pour le faire reculer.
Ça inspire un peu. Il n'y a aucune loi qui va empêcher les étudiants et les étudiantes de se manifester. Une traduction pour les anglophones? No law will stop student demonstrations. Which is good news for those of us watching from a safe distance. What started as a dispute over rising tuition fees has snowballed into a full-blown political movement. I don't think there's any doubt at this point that a 75% increase in schooling is not at the heart of this issue anymore. Maybe it is, what do I know? From my perch at CITR Newsroom, it looks like students, whether they're trying to or not, are going to boot the Liberals out of office and on to their increasingly humbled arses. In the meantime, it should be fun to see how this plays out. These students have partially sacrificed their education to fight for what they believe is right, whereas their elders, the teachers and postal workers, and countless other unionized labor groups crumbled under identical legislation. This thing might be far from over, but for those of us watching, there'll be lots to learn from. For CITR News, I'm Martin Lemelin. And those are your provincial and national headlines on News 101. We're going to take a quick break, but please stay with us for your international news and your... No, just the international news.
As well as several interviews Amy Goodman conducted on behalf of Democracy Now! At the NATO summit and the protesters outside.
Have you heard of the newly opened NSCS Discovery Restaurant at 1515 Discovery in Jericho Park? Profits support NS Culinary Education Society of BC. Enjoy breakfast on the beach for only $4.95, served daily from 7 a.m. till 11 p.m. Say you heard this ad and receive 5% off lunch and dinner items until May 31st, 2012. Enjoy breakfast, lunch, or dinner at the newly opened NSCS Discovery Restaurant at 1515 Discovery in Jericho Park and support a local social enterprise.
Jazz is a word that means many different things to many different people. The best definition of jazz that I know of is the jazz show on CITR with yours truly, Gavin Walker. Monday nights, 9 to midnight, with the jazz feature at 11 o'clock. Check us out every Monday.
Welcome back to News 101 here on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Chirag Mahajan.
And I'm Martin Lemelin. We are broadcasting live from the University of British Columbia, right here at the Student Union Building. Thank you for being with us, and it's now time for your international headlines, and for that we will go to Free Speech Radio News.
These headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Nearly 100 Yemeni troops died today when a suicide bomber wearing an army uniform detonated explosives during preparations for a military parade in the country's capital, Sana'a. Hundreds more were injured, many critically. A spokesperson for an Al-Qaeda-affiliated group, Ansar al-Sharia, claimed responsibility and said the attack was intended as a message to the US in response to drone attacks and Yemeni military activity that has killed militants. In Quebec, hundreds of protesters were arrested over the weekend after a new law restricting the right to protest went into effect. For FSRN, Stephanie Clement reports.
In Montreal, 300 people were arrested Sunday during the 27th consecutive night demonstration against tuition hikes. The night before, thousands of people took part in the march, which ended in violent unrest. Riot forces fired tear gas and sound grenades, police cars were vandalized, and barricades were erected before being set on fire. On both nights, the protests were declared illegal from the start. They didn't comply with the strict new rules of Special Law 78. The new law postpones classes to late August in universities where students are still on strike. It also requires demonstrations of 50 people or more to give a detailed itinerary to police 8 hours in advance and forbids protests from taking place within about 150 feet of a university campus. Also on Friday, Montreal City Councillors voted in favor of a new bylaw banning masks during protests. Student unions, legal observers, and human rights groups have come out against the special law. Stéphanie Clermont, FSRN, Montréal.
In Russia, activists are struggling to keep their protest camp in St. Petersburg going after government officials ordered the square closed for repairs earlier today. The Occupy camp was established 2 weeks ago in the city's Central Park to protest the inauguration of Vladimir Putin. FSRN's Ekaterina Danilova reports.
Activists set up the camp in St. Isaac Square on May 6th, the day of President Putin's inauguration. The camp started as a protest against Putin's re-election, which came amid widespread accusations of electoral fraud. Dozens of people have been occupying the square ever since, with several staying overnight. In Moscow, 20 people were arrested on Sunday at the camp there. Today, occupiers in St. Petersburg were told to leave by Tuesday morning. Olga Kurnosova is the head of the opposition group Citizens Committee. She said the camp has served as an important meeting place.
This is a free area. Anybody can come and find like-minded people. They can see that various political currents exist. For example, yesterday we had political debates between anarchists and nationalists. Nobody fought, not even quarreled.
Demonstrators are calling for fresh presidential elections. Activists say they are planning to protest against Putin throughout the summer. Ekaterina Danilova, FSRN, St. Petersburg, Russia.
On Saturday, the largest civil rights organization in the U.S. passed a resolution in support of gay marriage. It's not the first time that the NAACP has taken a position on gay marriage. In 2008, the organization opposed a constitutional amendment in California banning same-sex marriage. On a teleconference, Rosalind Brock, chair of the National Board of Directors of the NAACP, explained the reasons for the decision.
When people ask why the NAACP stands firm for marriage equality, we say that we have always stood against laws which demean, dehumanize, or discriminate against any person in this great country.
The resolution follows statements by President Obama that he supported marriage equality. Some criticized the president for not making a public statement earlier when it might have helped influence the turnout in North Carolina, where voters recently approved a constitutional amendment defining marriage as only between a man and a woman. The chairperson of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission announced today that he is stepping down from his post. Dr. Gregory Yaxko was named to the commission by former President George W. Bush in 2005. He became chair in 2009. Yaxko was instrumental in killing the government's plan to dump nuclear waste at Yucca Mountain, and focused attention on improving long-standing public safety issues at existing U.S. nuclear power plants. His leadership was not without controversy, but some, including Congress member Ed Markey, said the four commissioners had pro-industry interests and were attempting to drive Yaxko out. He will continue to serve until his replacement is confirmed. And those are the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. In Oakland, California, I'm George Lavender.
Thanks to Free Speech Radio News for those international headlines. Daily news and headlines can be found at their website, fsrn.org. And now we go to Democracy Now! For Amy Goodman's coverage of the protests outside the NATO summit in Chicago. First up, we have her interview with Reverend Jesse Jackson, who's part of the Rainbow Push Coalition. Who was joined by Iraq Veterans Against the War and Afghanistan's for Peace at the head of Sunday's anti-NATO march in Chicago.
Tom Morello, also at the anti-NATO protest, was the Reverend Jesse Jackson of Rainbow Push Coalition, which is based here in Chicago. I asked him about the significance of the NATO summit and the protests.
You know, people are here from around the world searching for alternatives to war. War seems to be expanding. People seem to have accepted NATO as a defensive organization. Defense against Soviet expansion into Europe, allowing Europe to restabilize as it has, and to keep the Germans from rearming. So the Soviet Union is gone. Germany is now an ally. Europe is stable again in the military and in the economic sense. But here we are today. We ventured into Iraq on the wrong target. $3 trillion in lives and money lost. What could $1 trillion do today? Why about every state budget deficit? the 750,000 public workers lost could get their jobs back. So the misadventure is very costly. Now we seek to go and to expand a long-term commitment to Afghanistan. $2 to $4 billion a week. We'll be laying off transit workers, closing schools and closing hospitals. We can't afford it. It is a mission not worthy of the investment. I hope people who are here today will remain nonviolent and disciplined and focused. The media would rather cover a brick than to cover the message. When the nurses say health care, not warfare, that's the message. When the veterans say, when we come home, we should come home to a home. The veterans deserve a lifetime health care, a place to stay, a job and education. That message should not be lost. And if that message is affirmed, I think American people will embrace that message.
The Reverend Jesse Jackson of the Rainbow Push Coalition, based here in Chicago. And that does it for our broadcast.
As Amy Goodman said, that was Reverend Jesse Jackson. Up next, we have another interview by Democracy Now! With Rainer Braun, who's a German peace activist and chair of the International Coalition, Not to War. No to War, No to NATO, who was also present at the protesters at the Chicago NATO summit.
Is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from Chicago. German delegates from more than 60 countries are taking part in this year's NATO summit here in Chicago. Meanwhile, many international peace activists have also traveled to the United States to take part in the protests.
Rainer Braun. I'm coming from Germany. I'm the executive director of the International Lawyers Against Nuclear Arms and the chairperson of the International Coalition No to War, No to NATO. I'm here to protest against the dinosauria, a reflection of the Cold War period. We do not need NATO any longer because the old enemy of the NATO, the Russia Pact, is over, but NATO still continues. It spends $1 trillion per year. And we need this money for jobs, for healthcare system, for education. So we really have to overcome NATO. NATO for us is the biggest military alliance in the world, which makes wars, not only in Afghanistan, but also in Iraq and other places. And we need peaceful conflict solutions, alternatives to war. And this is the reason we are here and protesting with our American friends, with our sisters and brothers here, against this huge NATO summit in Chicago.
Now, NATO leaders, presidents, generals, argue that multilateralism is important. For example, they say they're here to figure out a way to eventually end the war in Afghanistan. Your response to that?
You know, 2014, this means more than 2 years. In the last 2 years, about more than 5,000 people, soldiers died, and about 25,000 civilians died. I think we cannot wait again for two years longer till the troops come home. I think the idea of the French president immediately to start withdrawing the troops, this is the right idea, and we are supporting these ideas. We think the troops should come home immediately and so quick as possible. What you need is a negotiation process in Afghanistan, in the region. All parties in Afghanistan, including the Taliban, have to sit together at one table, negotiate a peace process, and we need the same with the countries around, the countries in the region.
It's interesting, right after the socialist president of France, François Hollande, was inaugurated, one of his first acts was to go to Germany to meet with your president, with Angela Merkel. Why? And what about the approach that Germany is taking?
You know, historically, we have close relations to France. And by the history of these two common countries, this is a big, big success. You know, we had wars between Germany and France for hundreds of years. So it's a big success. We are now peaceful neighbors. They are coming together to find a solution for the economic crisis in Europe. Austerity solution, which is not our solution. But Merkel also wants to convince Hollande to give up his plans for bringing the troops home in the beginning of 2012. And this we absolutely disagree. So I'm so happy that Hollande at the press conference next to the President of the United States underlined his idea to bring the troops from Afghanistan home in 2012. This is a big step forward to peace in Afghanistan.
What is an alternative to NATO?
The alternative to NATO is a common security project in Europe and between Europe and the Atlantic Ocean. Having in mind that we have to solve common economic, common social, common environmental program, for this we need a huge amount of money, so we have to reduce the military budget tremendously to have this money for peaceful and social affairs.
German peace activist Rainer Braun from Berlin, also at the NATO summit. He participated in an alternative summit and protested the NATO summit. Among those who were also there was musician and activist Tom Morello, who has performed at a number of rallies and concerts here in Chicago over the past 3 days. I caught up with him after he performed at the anti-war rally in Grant Park.
Thank you to Democracy Now! And Amy Goodman for that interview with Rainer Braun, who's a German peace activist and chair of the international coalition No to War, No to NATO.
And that'll do it for our program for today, Monday, May 21st, 2012. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, get involved with the show, or give us an important news tip, we would very much appreciate it if you can contact us through our email, news@citr.ca. You can subscribe to our podcast, listen to our latest interviews, or on our website, citr.ca/news. For more independent news, join us Mondays and Fridays, 5 p.m., for another edition of News 101. I'm Martin Lemelin.
And I'm Chirag Mahajan. Today's show was produced by Martin and me.
Mostly CJ.
Well, I try. From the entire news team here at CITR, thank you for listening and have a good week. Stay tuned for Slow Throats Clapping Hands, right here on CITR 101.9 FM.